Okay, so we are holding on, we're holding three lines from the bottom of Mem Ches Amud Beis. We're in the middle of, so we said yesterday, we started telling the whole story of Yoav and all the backstory involving him. We said that the part that we were dealing with was that that back when Yoav had killed Abner, David had cursed him with five different curses that should run in his family. But now, years later, when Shlomo wants to have he cursed him with these five things. So now, years later, after David has passed away, and Shlomo is sending Benayahu ben Yoyada to execute Yoav, so Yoav says, you can't do both. If you're gonna kill me for having killed Abner and Amasa, then you need to take the curses back on yourself. And Shlomo agreed to do that, and thus we said that we found that sure enough, he agreed to take them on himself. He can accomplish what his father told him to do to make sure that justice is carried out. Kibbutz Av, but also it's for Yoav's own benefit. This way he doesn't lose his place in Olam Haba. Anyway, the point is that we started going through how we see that indeed among David and Shlomo's descendants, we see that among David and Shlomo's descendants, there were people who suffered from each of these five things. So we went through a few of them yesterday. We said Rechavam was a Zav. Uzziyahu was a Metzora, and we said that Asa had to use a cane because he had gout. He had a foot illness. So now that's where we're up to. You're asking, is that a kingly thing to do? I don't know if you have to execute justice. And yes, that's what it takes. That's all a different question. But okay, he said that he'll take it on the family. But yes, well, later on in the Masechta, anyway, we'll see it in a different context we have over there. That at first David was supposed to be punished for the various things that happened because of him, and in the end, one of his guys, Avishai, the whole killing of Novi Rakonim, which happened because indirectly, he was the cause of it. The tzaddik is held to a higher standard. So first he agrees to take the punishment on himself, and he almost gets killed by a giant over there, and then Avishai eventually convinces him, let it remain for your children. We'll see that in the last paragraph. The point is that, so sometimes, but it can be left for the children.
Was there a that once you curse someone, if it's not legitimate?
That's what we're going to have on the top of the article.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So now that's where we're up to. Three lines from the bottom of Mem Ches Amud Beis. Okay. Noifel Bacherev, where do we see that there was a descendant of David and Shlomo who fell by the sword? Mi Yoshiyahu. We see that in the story of Yoshiyahu. Dichtiv, Vayorim, really is Lamelach Yoshiyahu, that they shot arrows at him. They arrows and spears they shot at him, and they made his whole body like a sieve.
Does that apply to all of the
tenants? Not all, obviously some yes, some not. The point is these things run in the family. We have examples. It's now that we have examples of all of them. Anyway. So the point is, they shot spears at him, so therefore that Marsha says, I mean, there's a number of kings of Yehuda who were killed by the sword or assassinated or whatever, but Yeshiyahu is the one that we see that he was repeatedly struck with swords and spears, and therefore the Gemara mentions that point. And he was killed by the Mitzrayim, who he didn't want to allow them to march throughout Israel on the way to another battle of theirs. Anyway. So that's Vahasau Lachem Yechonia. Where do we see that there was somebody from Beis David who was lacking bread? We see Yechonia, the next to last king of Yehuda. He was taken into Golos, in Golos Babel, that we learned before. Dichtiv, and the Pasuk says that afterwards, after Nebuchadnezzar died and his son Evel Merodach took over, so it says, his daily meal was given to him. So Rashi says from Nebuchadnezzar, and not the Pasuk says it was from Evel Merodach. So one possibility is it's a mistake in Rashi, and Rashi meant to say Evel Merodach. But Marsha says the word is that evidently if you say that only when Evel Merodach came to the throne, and by that time Yechonia has been in jail 30-odd years, only then did he get a regular stipend, implying up until that point he was often hungry for bread. And that's why Rashi uses the expression Meis Nebuchadnezzar. Anyway, the point is that at one point or another he was lacking bread. So they were that was the curse.
Can you tell us the lineage of the kings again?
Nebuchadnezzar and his son Evel Merodach. And then Evel Merodach was the son of Nebuchadnezzar.
Where does it say that?
In the side over here by Rashi. Based Nebuchadnezzar, Evel Merodach. This is like the expression that people say, Tehei Luta v'loi Tehei Lota. Better you should be the one who receives the curse rather than the one who gives it. because you see over here, this is a kilas chinam, it was an unnecessary curse, and sure enough, it ended up bouncing back onto David and onto David and Shlomo's family. In other words, the point is, as upset as David was with what Yoav did, he didn't have to curse him. And we see, in the end, you couldn't just say, well, okay, fine, he cursed him, but now we'll just say, fine, it's canceled. It doesn't have to go on Yoav, but it doesn't have to go on anybody else either. No, it's always going to land back somewhere. The Maharal talks about it in one of in his Chiddush HaGadot. He says, like, all these five were saying, but they're killing chinam when you curse somebody for no good reason. The Maharal mentions that he says, of course, it's like when you're, if you throw a rock at a wall, the rock is going to bounce right back at you. Same thing. Okay.
With
doesn't say, just said Yahul, no, it doesn't say the Hashem's name in the positive, just said Yahul or Al Rosh Yoav. A good reason might be. There are times when it's a necessary thing, but here, I don't know, he wasn't one of them.
If someone curses you, you can just point to the Torah and say,
okay, let's go on. So a few of the Yoav Dayane, so they brought Yoav in to start judging him. So one explanation is that, in fact, what the Gemara means is they brought him to the Sanhedrin. Given that we had before, we said yesterday, Yoav did not want to be executed by the Melech, because then then his Nechasim are going to go to the king rather than to his Yoshim, and the whole point why we're bringing this into the Gemara is because, according to the Chachamim, that's the case. So according to that, Yoav did not want to be executed by the king. He preferred to be judged by Beis Din. So now they brought him to Beis Din. The other possibility, some of Farshim say, is maybe it means that no, maybe it means that after all, he is being brought in front of Shlomo to be judged, or also there are some of the Rishonim want to say that even a king, when he's allowed to execute somebody, he still can't just do it unilaterally, he still has to go through Beis Din. If that Beis Din judge the guy, just maybe fine, they don't need all the usual rules of evidence and everything, but you still need, the king can't just do it unilaterally. Okay, a few of the Yoav Dayanim, so they brought Yoav, and they were judging him. Amalei, so he asks him, or they ask him, my time of Katalthala Avner, why did you kill Avner? As we discussed yesterday, that after Avner had come to David to make peace with him, then Yoav got wind of it and called Avner back without David knowing and killed him. Amale, so Yoav answers, Goyal Adam da Asoil Avoy. I was the Goyal Adam for my brother Asoil, who Avner had killed in a previous part of the story, earlier in Sefer Shmuel. So they, I'm the Goyal Adam. In other words, that was legitimate. So in other words, that was legitimate. Not self-defense. In other words, it was legitimate. The problem is, Asol Roidev, but they tell him that Asol was a Roidev. He was chasing after Avner with intent to kill. So in that case, then, Avner had every right to kill him. So you can't be a Goyal Adam. Amalei. So, okay, we're losing track. Who's saying what? So Yoav says, I'm the Goyal Adam. They said, there's no reason to be Goyal Adam. I saw your brother was a Roidev. Amalei, so Yoav says, he was a Roidev. He was chasing after Avner, and therefore Avner had a right to kill him in self-defense. Technically, actually, yes. Now that you mention it, other people could also, if there's no other way, yeah. However, Amalei, but they said to Yoav, Yoav says he could have saved him from the Avera by wounding him in one of his limbs. Avner could have saved himself or saved Asol from the Avera, killing him or whatever, by wounding him. Who says he had to kill him? So therefore, he killed him instead. That makes him a Retzeach. He's a Retzeach. I'm a Goyal Adam. Amalei, so they answered him, Lo Yochel Le. Okay, but it was an emergency situation. Avner was not able to. Asoel is right behind him. He's not able to aim properly to be able. In that case, then the din is Takeh is allowed to kill him. But there's no other way. Amalei, so Yoav says, Hash, look at this. Hash to the Dothan Chamish is given lay. Look at this. He didn't just hit him anywhere. He actually hit him in the fifth rib. Just him, as the pasuk says, "Vayakeu Avner ba'achrei achanis alachaymish." It says that Avner hit Asoel with the back of his spear, the handle of the spear, in other words, at the chaymish. V'amar Rabbi Yechon, and what is the chaymish? Rabbi Yechon says, "Begoifin chamishis," in the fifth rib, "Makom she more of a covered tluyin bo," the place where the gallbladder and the liver hang, and therefore it's a very sensitive spot. And you hit somebody there, it can be a death blow. So obviously he did have pretty good aim. He knew exactly what he was doing. So he couldn't, by the same thing, have aimed someplace else that would only wound Asoel and not kill him.
The legs move, not as much as the trunk, more than the trunk.
No, it doesn't have to be the legs, whatever. He could have gotten him in an arm, he could have gotten him elsewhere on his torso, whatever. But Dothan Chamish is a small spot, obviously. He was his
spear?
Yeah. No, it was with the back of the spear, but still, it was a strong blow. Yeah. Avner was a strong guy. So therefore, in other words, Yoav says, so the fact of the matter is, he argues, Avner was a Ritzeach. He had no right to kill Asael the way he did. He could have wounded him. And if he did kill him, that makes him a Ritzeach, and that makes me the Goel Adam. Okay. Amalei, so they said, they said to him, Nezel Avner, fine. Let Avner's din go. So Rashi learns, in other words, Potter after Olav. Rashi learns, fine, you know what, fine, you have a valid argument, fine, we accept your argument when it comes to Avner. Some of the other Mephoshim say that no. For example, Marsha says that no. The fact of the matter is, later on, we see that Jobit, before he died, points out that Yoav has to be killed because he killed Avner and Amasa. Shlomo himself, when he finally has Yoav killed, he says to him, I'm doing it because you killed Avner and Amasa. So we see he didn't accept his argument. So therefore, they explain that it just means he's not saying fine we'll let it go. He's saying fine we'll set it aside because I have other grounds against you anyway. Fine, I'm not going to go argue with you back and forth about the pros and cons of Avner. I still hold you guilty about Avner.
It's not a goal of them. I mean,
if that's the thing, if Avner is not related to them.
No.
Yes.
So they are.
Exactly, Yoav is Asael's brother. So that's the thing. If Avner was a Ritzeach, then Yoav has a good point. On the other hand, maybe not. The fact of the matter is, maybe Avner wasn't able to. Maybe it so happened that he hit him. Okay, whatever. So the point is, we're saying Nezel Avner, fine.
So far we've said that.
Rashi's explanation is that it means, fine, I accept your argument. Avner was wrong in what he did, and you were right. You had a right to kill him. The other explanation is, no, we're still not accepting that argument. However, fine, we're not going to argue about it anymore because we're going to go on to the next. We're going to go on to the next count anyway. Okay, next. Yeah. Okay, my time of Katalta La Amasa. Fine, but why did you kill Amasa? Amalei, Yoav answers, Amasa murdered Malchus. Amasa was a murdered Malchus. I had a right to kill him on those grounds. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, I mentioned yesterday in the background.
Kill someone who's murdered Malchus or the Melech.
Okay, that's a valid point. Maybe the king has to give him official permission, but at least you can't say that cold blooded murder.
Well, maybe puppet all
the yeah.
But if only the king has the right to do it, it is cold blooded murder.
No, not necessarily. You're doing it on behalf of the king, especially Yoav was the general.
The king never asked it.
Okay, no. Amasa murdered Malchus. I'm arguing Amasa was a murdered Malchus and he was deserving of death, and I carried it out. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, I mentioned yesterday in the background that I was telling that right after the revolt of Avshalom was over, which at the end of that, David appointed Amasa his new general, because he was angry at Yoav for killing Avshalom. After that, a new rebellion breaks out, led by a guy named Sheva ben Bichri. So David tells Vayomer HaMelech LaAmasa, the king says to Amasa, Hazek li es ish Yehuda shloshes yom, go call together the men of Yehuda in the next 3 days. And the Pasuk says, Vayelech Amasa lahazik es Yehuda. So Amasa went to gather all of Yehuda together. Vayochel v'gomer, but he was late. He didn't come back at the end of 3 days. And that's when David had to send Yoav and Avishai to, So in other words, Amasa was a murdered Malchus. You told him to be back in 3 days,
but
and he didn't. David sent Amasa to gather the soldiers.
Initially.
After Amasa didn't show
back.
Up. Then he didn't send Yoav to kill Amasa. He sent Yoav to gather the army together and get going about those and put down Sheva ben Bichri's revolt. On the way, Yoav met up with Amasa and killed him. But he's arguing Amasa is a murdered Malchus and I had a right to kill him. Amalei, so Shlomo tells him no. Amasa achen v'rakin dorash. Amasa knew to darshin when the Torah says the word ach or the word rak, that it means it's a mute, as we have throughout Shas. Meaning, in other words, if a king is telling you to do something against what the Torah says, you don't listen to him. We learn that because in Sefer Yoshua, at the end of the first parak, it's after of Simchat Torah, the Bnei God and Bnei Reuven say to Yoshua, whatever you command us, we will do. Rak chazak ve'emah. So what's the rak? It means, but not if you tell us to go against Divrei Torah. So, and Amasa knew that. So where is there, what is there in what David is saying that goes, what is there in what's going against the Torah? Ashkechinu deposit tfasiach lehuba mesechta. Amasa went to start gathering the soldiers together, and he found they had just started learning a new mesechta. Omar, so he said to himself, listen, see, the pasuk says that we just quoted from Yeshua, kol ish asher yamres picha v'lo yishmas tvarachal choleshet. Any person who disobeys you and doesn't listen to what you say about anything that you command him, you must will be killed. Yochel apilu l'divrei Torah. You would think that means even if the king or the leader tells you to go against the Torah, Talmud lemer rak chazak v'emach. So the rak teaches you that not. The orders from the king cannot be allowed to override Torah. So therefore, that means when if they've started learning their new Masechta, you can't just go and tear them away from that and send them and bring them to battle. Therefore, that's why Amasa is late coming back. He wasn't doing it because he murdered Malchus. He did it out of respect for Torah. Apparently, it wasn't such an emergency that it's true. You have this Sheva ben Bichri. Fine, he's going to gather himself a following. Maybe it's not going to be something that in another day or two, it's not going to get completely out of hand. We see because David Tlachatzchila tells him. Be back here with the soldiers in 3 days. If it was an emergency, then you got to have them together.
It was pressing.
Not that pressing. So I'm also understood that's not that pressing.
He pushed the red button that said nuke, and they said, we're going to learn Torah now.
By the way, Marshall says, how does the Gemara know any of this anyway? You actually have a kriyuk ksiv in the pasuk over there. Mm-hmm. The word that we quoted in the Gemara over here by Yoicher is written, the ksiv of it is Vav Yud Yud Ches Resh, which would be like Vayi Yocher or Vayichar or something. You find in Parshas Noach, you have Vayi Yochel or Shibas Yom Acherim. And Rashi points out there's a difference between Vayochel and Vayi Yochel. One is that he did it himself, and the other one was forced on him by outside circumstances. So the same thing over here. He was late, but why was he late? Because of outside circumstances. Because the soldiers were busy learning Torah. And what the pasuk continues, that he was late. I'm moyed. I show you other. So Marsha says moyed, as in they were learning a masechta from Seder Moyed. Okay. So therefore, in other words, Sam Masa was not a murderer of Malchus, and you had no right to kill him.
Oh boy, now he's in trouble.
Okay. Ella, how who got a murderer of Malchus? However, let me tell you something, Yoyo. You yourself are a murderer of Malchus. Mm. So one explanation is we're saying you're accusing Amasa of being a murderer of Malchus, and really you're guilty of it yourself. But the other explanations are not one has nothing to do with the other. But fine, in other words, even if we were to accept that, fine, let's say fine, you can argue that you were a shogig when it comes to Amasa because you didn't know this drasha of Rak Chazak Ve'Amas, and therefore you thought he was murder Malchus. And let's say even we accepted your argument as far as Avner before. Nevertheless, we have another count against you, the third count, which is that you're a murder Malchus.
On the basis of
okay. Dichtiv, because Dichtiv, the pasuk says, "Vashmua ba ad Yoyov." After David has reached Yoyov, that Shlomo is now the new king, and that David had told Shlomo what to do about Yoyov, and Yoyov was concerned. Ki Yoyov not to achre Adoniyo, because Yoyov had followed Adoniyo at the beginning of Sefer. It tells how this Adoni Yahu, another one of David's sons, wanted to be king. We talked about it briefly in the second parak. He thought he's going to make himself the next king, and he started getting together all the following, Yoyov being one of them, and Bathsheba and Nathan and Navi heard about it and came and told David, and David gave orders that Shlomo should be anointed right away as king in order to forestall this thing of Adoni Yahu.
But then again, he didn't order Adoni Yahu to be arrested However,
what it is in the Pesukim over there, it tells that after all of this, Adoni Yahu was also afraid for his life, and like Yoyov, like we said yesterday, Adoni Yahu went and held on to the corners of the Mizbeach to come to safety over there, and Shlomo sends, I think, also Bnei Yahu to tell him that, relax, as long as you behave yourself, I'm not going to harm you. Later on, you have the story that we had in the second parak that Adoni Yahu wants to marry Avishag, who had been David's attendant, and that made him a murderer of Malchus. That shows he's trying to use Shavrita Shalmelech, he's trying to use something that belongs, something or someone that belonged as a personal item to the king, and that shows he still has aspirations to be king, and then Shlomo, because you're not allowed to. Nobody else is allowed to use Shavrita Shalmelech.
Well, that's it then. But how does it show that?
It shows that he still considers himself a melech. A melech is allowed to use a shayvet shamelech. Shlomo, being the king, would be allowed to use David's scepter. Shlomo would have been allowed to marry Abishag.
No one's allowed to marry
Adoni Yahu, being a commoner, is not. If Adoni Yahu wants to marry her, it shows he still thinks of himself as a potential king.
And that's being
murdered Malchus. Yeah, he tried to make himself king before, and he still obviously thinks that. So anyway, Ki Yoyov nota achre Adoni Yahu. So Yoyov had followed Adoni Yahu, but achre Avshalom loy nota. But he had not followed Avshalom. So the question loy nota. What does that mean to say he didn't incline after Avshalom? First of all, why bother mentioning it at all? It doesn't seem to be negeya to the pasuk. That doesn't make him in trouble. Abed, that means he was on David's side then. And what do you mean loy nota? Like he didn't incline in that direction. Amar Rav Yehuda Shabikish Lintos Falonata. It means even when it came to Avshalom's rebellion, which is about 3 years earlier, he had in mind that he's going to go, that he's going to go follow Avshalom. But in the end, he didn't. And therefore, so actually, so the Riaf on Inyakov points out, the point is, therefore, so Shlomo realized that. Shlomo knew that Yoav had, was thinking, maybe, should I follow Avshalom or should I stay with David? In the end, he stayed with David for reasons that the Gemara is going to say now.
Right.
But no, we'll say in a second. But the point is, therefore, that Shlomo therefore could use the fact that he followed Adoniyahu, who may be fine. Adoniyahu is not trying to supplant David as king. He's just trying to become king after David dies. But the fact that not only that, but he even had in mind maybe to support Absalom, who did try to overthrow David, those two things together are enough to make him a murderer.
This is the proof that Rabbah is Allah and not like a buyer about having a mind for a king.
Well, the same thing, but okay.
He didn't have a mind, but what he did was without.
Because David's moisture still existed. So Rashi explains moisture in the sense that David was still had his strength. When Avshalom revolted, it was 36, 37 years into David's kingship, he was old already, he was in his late 60s, but he was vigorous.
David,
yeah. So therefore, Yoav was afraid to go against it. Mashenkin, when Adoniyahu was trying, when Adoniyahu made his big bid for kingship, David is already old, he's 70, he's weak. It's 3 years afterwards, but 3 years can make a difference. And we find already, it's already at the beginning of the law. We find already that, at that point already David is cold and he needs something to warm his clothes, don't warm him up, and that's why he needs Avishag. Therefore, Yoav figured it's safe to go against David. The Yad Ramah has a different explanation of Lachlokas Shel David, is that there was a lot of kindness that David did for Yoav. He made him his general, after all.
Uh-huh.
So at the earlier time with Avshalom, Yoav didn't want to go against David. With Adoniyahu, he figured, fine, Adoniyahu just wants to be king after David's dead instead of Shlomo. That's not so bad. That won't be ungrateful to David to back Adoniyahu.
Why was that my river?
Because Shlomo was the legitimate king. Shlomo, David had said earlier that Shlomo was going to be...
David had said in a clear way that no one could dispute
that
Shlomo was
dead. Melech.
Yeah.
So there's
Asaros.
Yeah, that same Asaros. Okay. Yosef Chanina says there's a different reason why Absalom didn't, why Yoav didn't back Absalom. Adain Itzagnini Shal David Kayomen, because the Itzagnini of David was still around. Itzagnini usually stargazers. But Rashi says over here, what it means is, it means the powerful guys that David had leading his army, that he would follow them when he would follow them. They would be the leaders in his wars. So therefore, the point is, just like people follow stargazers, or at least they did in those days, so David would follow these people in war, and therefore the point is they were still around in Absalom's time, and therefore Yoav was nervous to go against David. What are these?
Are you allowed to do that after
Torah? No, they're not stargazers. They're tough people. The Amr of Yehuda Amr Rav, namely Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, we learned this back earlier in the second parak. Arba Meis Yiladim Hayolei LeDavid. David had 400 children. Yeshayimim, that it means literally his own children from Yifat Toyav. Yeshayimim, it just means boys from various soldiers in his army. All of them were children of Yifas Torah. They all wore their hair long in the style of the Goyim. So this way they look tough and they look mean and the Goyim will be afraid of them. So you actually have, if they were Bnei Yifas Torah, you have a Machloka Sadashi and Tosfos elsewhere. We learned it back in Kedushin. We talked about it briefly in the second parak. Are you allowed to have relations with Yifas Torah the first time while she's a Goyita? If the halacha is yes, then the children, any child that's born from that is considered a goy, unless he himself converts, because Hadassah Shalev Kedusha. In that case, these children are goyim, and they're taka allowed to wear their hair as a blurist or whatever. If you say you're not allowed to, then you would say the reason why they did it is so that they'll look scary to the goyim, and this way the goyim will be scared off, the goyim who they're fighting against will be scared off when they see people like that. Well, Mahalchen Berosh Agayosis, and they would go at the heads of the troops. The Hain, Balei Agrupin, Shel David, they are the tough guys, the guys with the fists of David's army. So that's what we're saying. And they were still around during Absalom's rebellion, and therefore Yoav was nervous to go against David and back Absalom.
Like
the foreign legion. Okay. Now, this that we just said, that the main kind of the secret weapon that David had so that his wars were successful were these Aramaic theologim. This argues with what Rav Abba Bar Kahana says. Rav Abba Bar Kahana, Yomole David like also Yoav. If it had not been David learning Torah, Yoav would not have been able to fight his wars and be successful. The Yomole Yoav like also David by Torah, and if it had not been for Yoav fighting his wars, then David would not have had the peace of mind to be able to learn Torah. In other words, according to Rav Abba Bar Kahana, the key thing, the success of David's wars, nothing to do with his Aramaic theologim, nothing to do with these scary looking guys, but rather having to do with David learning Torah. And Yoav fighting, that they were interdependent. So those two were the combination, were the magic combination.
David learning Torah made Yoav actually fight.
Made it that Yoav now has the ability to fight. So not the Aramaic theologian. Now they're a side thing, but there's a number of early years, by the way, in connection with Tuvah, in connection with Chopa, whatever, where the Rebbe talks about this idea. The idea, to put it in Chassidish terms, is David was Isaac, Yoav's job was to work with the world, or work against the world, rather, but to be out there in the world fighting. David's job is to be learning Torah, as we're saying over here, and therefore you need both. You need the Torah in order to be able to be successful in working against and eventually with the world and be Mavara of the world. And you need to be Mavara of the world. You need to be out there working on being Mavara of the world in order to actually be able to learn Torah. You can't just be sitting only in the dispatch. You can't only be out there doing Mitzvah. You need balance of both.
It's very actual what you want.
Okay.
It's very applicable to what's going on in our child.
Okay. I mean, you have the, no. It doesn't. But it doesn't mean, hold on, it doesn't mean that you have individual people who have to be doing both. Collectively, no. You have the B'nai HaYeshiva. David himself didn't go out to the wars. David himself is sitting in the palace learning Torah. Yoav is the one fighting the wars. You have, there's an interdependence between the Davids and the Yoavs. You don't say that every, you don't say, no, you don't, Chas V'Shalom, you don't say that every Yeshiva Bachar has to also go and serve in the army. No. But that's not what we're saying, because we're saying there's Davids and there's Yoavs. Okay.
Isn't there a lot of it, a general has to go up to the front and fight?
Yeah, that's Yoav's job. It's not that David never went out to the front, and it's obviously not that Yoav never learned Torah either, but Yoav's primary thing is Avodah Sabirurim, and David's primary thing is Torah. That's what we're saying. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, David oisem mishpat tzedakah l'cholama. As the pasuk says, David was doing justice and tzedakah for his whole people. The Yoav ben Tzruya alatzava, and Yoav ben Tzruya was in charge of the army. Meaning, those two things go together. Ma tam David oisem mishpat tzedakah l'cholama. What is it that enabled David to be able to do mishpat tzedakah? Which means, really, it doesn't just mean judging. It means being able to learn Torah. Because if he doesn't learn Torah, he doesn't know how to judge properly. Then it's not mishpat tzedakah. So why is that? Because Yoav was in charge of the army, and that gave David the ability to be able to sit and learn. And why is it that Yoav was able to fight the wars? Because in the background, David was learning Torah and executing justice. So yeah, the two things are interdependent.
But it's interesting.
The Loim de Torah need the soldiers, and the soldiers need the Loim de Torah.
It's interesting that the Gemara should start with Yoav, in fact, rather than starting with David.
Okay. It's both ways. Okay. All right. Going back now, further back in the story, we said that we said that Yoav killed Abner. So now we're going to get into a little bit. We're going to get into why that happened and how that happened. The pasuk describes it by Yetzer Yoav meim David, that Yoav, having found out that Abner had come to town and made a peace treaty with David, he's very upset. He thinks that Abner is there as a spy or something. Remember, Ish-bosheth is still around. Vayetze Yoav mim David. Yoav left David. Vayishlach malachim achrei Abner. He sent messengers to go after Abner and call him back. Vayashivu oisim mibur hasira. They brought him back from Bur Hasira, and they came back to Hebron, and that's where Yoav killed him. My Bur Hasira, Abner. What is Bur Hasira? So okay, the simple meaning is the name of a place, but why is it important for us to know? Amar Abba Bar Kahana, Bur Hasira gomelele Abner sheyaharei. It means that a bur, which means a pit, and a sira, which means a thorn, are the two things that caused Abner to be killed. What happened? Earlier in Sefer Shmuel, in Shmuel Aleph, we have the whole story of when David is running away from Shaul. You have two occasions over there when David was in a position that he could have killed Shaul, and both times he didn't. You have the one time when David is hiding out, one time when David is in a cave, and Shaul and his men are in the front of the cave, and David sneaks over and cuts off a corner of Shaul's garment, and afterwards shows him, look, I was so close to you, and yet I spared you, you should know I have nothing against you. The second time was, the second time, two chapters later in Sefer Shmuel, Shaul and his army are sleeping one night in a valley during the chase after David. David and one of his guys, Avishai, I think, or to a couple of his guys, I think Avishai and then somebody else, Ahimelech, I think, whatever, sneak into the camp. Avishai is trying to convince David, you have your opportunity now, kill Shaul. David says, I won't, he's anointed by the Eveshter, but I'll take his jug of water and his spear, and then he takes them and goes onto a nearby mountain and starts calling out for Avner. Look at this, Avner, how you talking? You're supposed to be guarding the king. How you talking? You're asleep. Look how close somebody was to the king, and here I have his spear and I have his pitcher of water. Now, in both those cases, now, what happened was, though, after the first time and after the second time, how come Taka Shaul is still chasing after David? What happened? The answer is, Rashi says, based on Midrashim, that Avner both times, actually, I think it's more in Barakas, I think, that both times Avner convinced Shaul that, no, the first time with the corner of the coat, Avner says, not necessarily. You know, maybe you were walking by some thorns over there, so some thorns got caught in your garment over there, and David cut it, and David ripped out the thorns and ripped out your garment with it, or some other Mephoshim say maybe a piece of your garment got caught on the thorns, and David found it there later. And so that's the sira, that's the thorn. And as far as the pitcher of water, so Rashi understands it means that he says, okay, so maybe somebody gave David your pitcher of water. One of your soldiers is a double agent or something. He took your pitcher and gave it to David to pretend that he's loyal to you, etc. Or some other Mephoshim say to make it fit more with the word burr, that
he had a personal pitcher.
Shaul had a personal pitcher, yes. So another slightly different explanation is that Avner tells Shaul maybe you forgot your pitcher of water by a well one time, by a burr, by a pit, and then David found them. And David found them and took them. So no proof that he was ever that close to you. But both times, David talked Shaul out of reconciling talked Shaul out of reconciling with David, and that is why we're saying that was why in the end he got killed. In other words, the fact that Abish didn't protect him because of that. Okay. Then the pasuk continues.
So isn't that good for the defense of what's the thing?
No, when Yoav has no right to kill Avner because of that, fine. Avner was Avner had done wrong by doing that, by perpetuating the machlokes. Nevertheless, though, actually, you know, it's interesting. One of the Mephoshim on the Enyaqtiv says the pasuk continues over there right afterwards. Mibor Hasidah that we quoted in the Gemara. The pasuk continues over there with the words with David lo yoda. David didn't know. So in context of the pasuk, it means that David didn't know that Avner had been called back, and therefore when he was killed, then it caught David by surprise. This is, I think, it's the Ion Yaakov says the vote is. It also means
that David.
Yes, but it in terms of our Gemara, I think the Ion Yaakov says that it also means David never knew that it was Avner who had talked Shaul out of reconciling with him in both those cases.
Right.
So he had nothing against Avner.
Right.
So you can't say it. So it's not a valid defense for Yoav to say I killed him because of that.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The pasuk is Vayateru Yoav al Teich Hashayel the Daber Ite Basheli. The pasuk says that inclined, like he turned Avner aside from his path into the gate al Teich Hashayel the Daber Ite Basheli to speak with him Basheli. The simple meaning of Basheli is that it means that Avner was unaware.
That was in Hebron.
So what does it mean Bashar? Amar Rav Yochanan Shadonit al Teich Hashayel. Amar Rav Yochanan Shadonit din Sanhedrin. It means that Yoav judged Avner like the Sanhedrin. It doesn't literally mean he brought him to the Sanhedrin, but it means he didn't just kill him on the spot. He actually argued it out with him first, as we shall see. The
point
is, the word Shire always means the Sanhedrin. What is it? Omale, he says, they're my time of Ktautel Asol. Why did you kill my brother Asol? And Avner answers, Asol Roydev Hava. Asol was a Roydev, as we said before. So Yoav says, you could have saved him from the Avera by wounding him in one of his limbs. You didn't have to kill him. And then Yoav and Avner answers, lo yachilu, like, I couldn't. And Yoav says, like we had earlier on the Omer, Hashem, Adolf, and Hamishis, Kivantele, look at this, you were able to strike him directly in the fifth rib, you weren't able to get him in one of his limbs instead. And therefore, in other words, I hold that you are in fact the Roseach, and therefore I am entitled to kill you as the Goel Adam.
You're Roseach because you did it on
because you did it on because you didn't have to kill him, you could have wounded Asol and prevented him from chasing after you that way. We'll see later on in the Masechta, and at the end of Perek Ben Sura Remora, at the end of the eighth Perek, we're going to have a sugya about this topic of roidus. Okay. When the pasuk says "Dabar ite Basheli," that Yoav brought Avner into the gate to speak with him, Basheli. What is Basheli? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav al iske sholu. It means that they were talking about sholu. So what is sholu? Rashi explains sholu is related to the word shal malcha, which means take off your shoe, like we find by Moshe by the snake. So what does it mean? In other words, Rashi brings based on a medrash that Yoav asked Avner. So tell me, if you have a yevama, need to do chalitza. If she has no hands, if her hands have been amputated, how does she untie the shoe? And Avner says she can do it with her teeth. Show me. So Avner gets down on the ground to show, and at that point, Yoav pulls out a sword and then stabs him. The Yad Ramah asks the question, I mean, now that just before Yoav had been pointing out to Avner that I'm the Goel Adam, what made Avner think that now I'm safe down and bending down on the ground in front of him? So he explains differently. Al-Iske Sholu means that he was talking with him, like we said before, about the matter of inadvertent. You're claiming you killed Asoel inadvertently, I hold that you killed him deliberately. So in other words, the continuation of the
thing. Amazing that Avner was about to untie his legs. When he knew
that's where the Yad Ramah's question. With that said, I'll tell you, by the way, though, there are a number of the Achronim who talk about in various ways what is the Yevama with Chalitza have to do with this whole thing anyway, and they explain in various ways the Aruch Lamer has a variation of it, Ben Yoyada has another one, there's a couple of them that basically it was a continuation. They were discussing the matter of a Roidif. Under what circumstances are you allowed to kill a roidif? After all, the pasuk only mentioned imbamachteres, that you find him tunneling into your house. How do you know it applies in other cases? And from that, by a segue, it led to the fact that chalitza doesn't have to be done, that a roidif, there's a normal way, kind of, that he comes bamachteres, but there's also a less normal way, such as when he's chasing after you. And similarly, with a yavama, there's a normal way of doing chalitza with your hand and a less normal way of doing it with your teeth. And therefore, in other words, it was as part of the conversation. It's like a yoyev and not yet said in so many words, I am the Goel Adam, I am going to kill you, but they're discussing the question of what makes somebody a roidif or not, and he managed to segue the conversation into the matter of the Yevama.
But it's obvious, I mean, it's such a conversation, it's talking about roidif,
he should have had a little sixth sense, but nevertheless, he bowed
down, and
he never, okay, so the positive continues by Akeir Shomer HaKlemish, he struck him in the fifth rib, and again, Amar Rav Yechon, Medoif and Chamishis, it means the fifth rib, Makam Shemar Rekavet Tloyin Bay, the place where the gallbladder and the liver came.
That's what
Avner had done to Amos. That's what Avner had done to Asoel. So yeah, that's what Yoav now did to Avner. Same exact spot.
Like a spear or
Spear, sword, whatever. Okay. All right. Eventually, going back now to when Shlomo is telling Bnei Yoav and Yoyada to go and have Yoav executed, he says the expression, "Beheshev Hashem et domai al roshe," Hashem will turn the guilt for his blood back on his own head. Asher poga b'shnei anoshim tzaddikim b'tovim mimenu, that he killed two people who were tzaddikim and better than him. What do we mean by the expression tzaddikim b'tovim mimenu? In what way were Avner and Amasa better and greater tzaddikim than Yoav? The answer is toivim shayu darshin achim v'rakim v'ulay darsh. They were good. They were toiv in that they knew how to darshin the achim v'rakim, like we said before, whereas Yoav didn't. In the case of Amos that we said before about the soldiers learning Torah. In the case of Avner, what it was is when you have the story when Shaul wants to wipe out Noiv Irakoyanim, that he says to Avner, go kill them, and Avner refuses to, on the basis of this. He saved the Shaul his whole life. He left Shavoshim. Yeah, but he knew not to follow a king when he's saying goes against the Torah. To wipe out Noiv Irakoyanim would be going against the Torah. But that's not considered Moriv Malchus, because if the king tells you to do something against the Torah, that's the same reason why we said Amasa is not a Moriv Malchus. Because the Torah outranks what the king says. As we learned back in the second paragraph, we even had an opinion over there that not only did Avner not want to do it, but that there was an opinion over there in the Gemara that he was even Moshe, that he protested the Shaul, you're not allowed to do this. Anyway, so Avner, and Amasa knew this Achen Virakim. You, Yoav, did not. and seduced him, and namely, in what sense? Namely, that David had sent instructions to Yoav about Uriah-Achit, to put him in the front lines of the battle and have him killed. Yoav, in other words, should have said, "Wait a minute, I can't go against the Torah, and
right,
I shouldn't." Fine, you can argue that Uriah was a murder of Amasa, but fine, in that case, take him in front of a bin. In that case, judge him in the regular way. Don't have him. Don't do this underhanded thing of having him killed in battle, whatever. And tzaddikim, in what sense are Avner and Amasa tzaddikim compared to Yoav? Shehen v'pevloy osu. In both those cases, they were given verbal instructions by the king directly, face to face, and they knew not to go against the Torah to do it. And you, Yoav, you were only sent in a letter to do this to Uriah, and you went and did it, where you could have argued that, after all, I only received in a letter. The king himself didn't tell it to me face-to-face, so it's not...
He sent
a private message to Yoav, telling him, leave Uriah in the front lines and have the other soldiers withdraw. Yeah, dub it, and have the other soldiers withdraw, and that way Uriah will get through. Yeah, so in other words, in that sense, Shlomo would say, you, Yoav, are not on the same level as Avner and Amasa. They disobeyed direct orders from the king when it conflicted with the Torah. You had only a letter from David, and you still followed it.
It was really against the Torah to do that?
At least there was an argument to have been made that it was. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Going on, the Pasuk mentions when Yoav kills Amasa, the Pasuk uses the expression that Amasa was not careful about the sword that was in Yoav's hands. What does that mean? It means that Amasa didn't realize that he's not holding a sword, that he's holding a sword. It means he had no reason to suspect that Yoav was going to kill him. Because, Yoav's excuse for killing Amasa was he was a murder Malchus. Amasa had no reason to think he's a murder Malchus. He knew Achin Verdakin, so therefore he had no reason. Yet.
What was exactly the... the
facts
behind that.
The facts behind what?
Behind why he killed Amasa.
Well, we said because he said that Amasa was a murder Malchus.
Because he
didn't come in the 3 days with the soldiers like he's supposed to chase after Shem and Brickley like he's supposed to.
Should have sent it to a
bad
team to make that
fine, but he took it into his own hands. Whatever. Well, that's why David and Shlomo are upset with him, and that's why he has to be punished. Okay. Finally, okay. So eventually, Taka Yoav was executed, and the pasuk says, "Vayikover bebeise b'midbar." He was buried in his house in the desert. Wow. So the question is, "Otzer beise b'midbar?" Who was Yoav's house a desert? Or even in the desert? Why would a general live in the desert, far away? Or he has to live near the capital or something. Omer, behold, Omer, not midbar. It means Yoav's house was like a midbar. Mam midbar mufkalakol, just like a midbar is hefker to everybody. Anybody can come in there. Af beisa show Yoav mufkalakol daver. Mufkalakol, the same thing. Yoav's house was hefker for everybody. In other words, aniim could always come and be welcome in Yoav's house. So now, up until now, we were talking about all the negative things that Yoav did. Now we got to finish off with a double type to tell about the good things that Yoav accomplished. He was a great person, even if he made mistakes. While he was alive. He was always a Machnesoida. Aniim could always come into his house and have what to have. So in that sense, his house was like a midpoint. Marsha explains the relevance of this is, you know, we said before that Yoav preferred to be judged by the Sanhedrin rather than be judged as a murderer of Malchus, because then his property would go to On the other hand, if he was to be judged by the Sanhedrin rather than as a murderer of Malchus, the problem with that is, then, as we learned in our Mishnah and in the Gemara, he doesn't get buried in his family plot. He gets buried in the place for the Neharogin or whatever. So therefore, the point is, why did he have this chus that even though in the end he was executed by Beis Din, that he got to be buried in his house in the Midbar, he had that chus because he was such a Baal Tzedakah. So therefore they waived the usual rule that he has to be buried in the place of the Harugi Beis Din, and he gets to be buried by his house.
How was he executed?
The Pashtos by Herod, by Yifkat by Yomas. He struck him with a sword and killed him. Okay. Dover Acher, Kamidbar. In another sense, Yoav's house was like a midbar. Ma midbar menukim gezel v'arayas. Just like a midbar is free of gezel and arayas, because nobody lives there, so there's no gezel there and there's no arayas there. Especially, it's a dangerous place. Nobody has the desire for arayas over there. You're too busy making sure you stay alive. So also Yoav's house was free of gezel and arayas, even though you often have that soldiers are not necessarily always the most moral people. But Yoav,
we're making an effort here.
Okay.
What about the Abedazarans?
What about them? And there's not even a half amenath of Abedazara there. But soldiers, you often find they're not so careful with other people's money because they're used to grabbing spoil, and they're not always so careful about our diet. You return to Canada, it's a hard up, but Yoav's house is not. Another thing in Yoav's favor, there's a passage that describes how after David conquered Yerushalayim, it says that David built up part of the city, v'yoyav yichaya et shara'ir. Yoav revived the rest of the city. So the simple meaning is it means that Yoav rebuilt the rest of the city or whatever. But the Gemara darshins it, Amar of Yehuda, after the munini ha'nosas, even when Yoav was eating various kinds of small fish, like sardines or anchovies or whatever, toyim, when he was tasting them, paris lahu, he would also spread out, he would also give out to the aniyim in the city. In other words, we're not just talking about when we said before that he gave to the aniyim, it doesn't just mean the basic like bread and whatever. It means even the delicacies, even the little things like that, he would also make sure the aniyim don't just have their bread, that they have their herring as well. They have the finer things in life.
Hadron Allah,
the vote is also shorter like the aniyim, because it means that the aniyim are like the shirayim, like the leftovers of the city, and even them he gave them this stuff. Hadron Allah
being executed, man.
No, but he still has his kotzim. Yeah, okay. Alright. Mishnah says, our missus nimsu relation, four types of missus have been given over to Beis Din. Illustrate Herod Lechek. Rav Shimon says the order is different. Sreva, Skila, Chenek, Vehereg. No, the order is Sreva first, then Skila, and Chenek first, then Hereg. Now, why do we care about the order? One thing is, Rashi says, for example, what if you have a person who's Chayav two Mrs. Basin? What if you have a person who did something that makes some Chayav Skila and something that makes some Chayav Sreva? The din is you give him the harsher punishment, because that includes the lesser one. Right. So the question is, what would you give him in this case? According to the Chacham, you'd give him Skila. According to Rav Shimon, you'd give him Seva. Same thing with Hereg and Chayav. Zum mitzvah saniskolim. This that we said in the previous parak was the mitzvah of how to do Skila, and in the next Mishnah on Nunbeis, we'll learn about the details of the other three mitzvahs. By the way, when it says, I have a mitzvah nimzer l'beisdin, the Yerushalmi points out the point of saying the word nimzer l'beisdin is, first of all, it means the beisdin has access to all four of those. But a melech, if he's going to kill somebody as a murder malchus or whatever, only has access to one, only Sakin. A king is not allowed to execute people with skill or strafe or chenek. Only Herod.
That's the
means only to the Beis Din, not to the king. Another meaning of it is also, we're going to learn later on in the Masechta about the whole concept of kinsonites of the kippah, the time when you put a person into a narrow room and feed him a starvation diet when he's done certain aveiros or whatever. That's not considered a missus Beis Din. You can't say that there's four missus Beis Din. You can't say there's five, there's only four. That's not considered a missus Beis Din. That's a side kind of thing. Amar Rava Amar Rav Schaira. So the Gemara says, so Rava says in the name of Rav Schaira, Amar Rav Huna, Kol Mokam Shoshana Chachamim Derech Minyan. Whenever we find in a Mishnah that the Mishnah gives a list of things, Ein Muktumum Ocher. It's not meant to be. There's no significance to the order of the list. It's not necessarily the first thing comes first and the later thing comes later. For example, Rashi says we're going to learn later on in the sugya. Let's say you have a Mishnah that mentions the eight clothes of the Kohen Gadol. They're not meant to be put on in the order listed in the Mishnah. Why the Mishnah lists them in that order, we'll see later, but the point is the order in the Mishnah is not meant to be the order they're put in. In other places, it just means the order is not.
That mean all of them?
No, wait. Except. That's what we're going to get to. Our Mishnah, we're going to see. We're starting this idea, and then we're going to see how it relates to our Mishnah. So in Muktamah Mokhah, the earlier and the later don't have any particular significance. And it means a number of things. It means that they're not necessarily going to be in that order. It means they can be done in a different order, as we're going to talk later about Chalitza. It means, for example, let's say with the Malachas of Shabbos or the Avos Nezikin or whatever, it means that there's no particular reason why one is first and the other one is later. That, you know, one Malacha is the same as any other Malacha, etc.
But here it is.
Chutz Mishiva Saman. Except for the Mishnah about the seven chemicals. The Tanan, namely, we learn in a Mishnah in Nida, Shiva Samman in Ma'avirin al Kesem. If you have, Rashi says the situation is, if you have a stain on a garment and you need to check whether it's blood, in which case it would be Dam Nida, and in that case anything that touches that garment would become Tamei, or whether it's not blood at all but dye or whatever.
In the woman's Tamei.
No, then they've died, and nobody's Tommy. But oh, yeah, that's true. The woman read Tommy off, though. Bloody Vanita, right? Right, right. That's true. Yeah. Tosafist learns differently. Tosafist says that even if we know that it's Damnida, there's still the question of are we able to remove it, and then in that case it'll be bottle or not. So you need seven chemicals to remove blood. What are they? Roik tokel, empty spit. The Gemara over there in Nidia explains them all in detail, but it means, you know, for our purposes, we'll just say briefly, roik tokel means that saliva, you didn't eat anything yet that day. So that saliva is especially potent. Yes. Omegrisim and water from the water, like soup from split peas. Not really soup. You chew split peas, and then you chew split peas, and then you use that. That's the water that comes out of them or whatever. Omeraglayim and urine. Neser. Neser is a niter. It's a chemical that contains sodium. Oboris. That's some kind of nitrate, I guess, or something. I don't know the word nitrate and nitrogen and whatever. It actually doesn't contain sodium. Yeah, whatever. It contains nitrogen, I guess. Whatever. That's why it's called nitre. Whatever. Anyway. Oboris. And oboris is a type of herb that's used for cleansing. Kmulya. Rashi says I don't know what kmulya is. The Aruch says it's another type of herb. The eshlach or the eshlog, and the seventh one is eshlog, which is something that you get from you get it from the holes or the oysters or whatever where you find pearls, whatever. So those are the seven chemicals. Vikatani Sefer, and the Mishnah can use Hevidon Shalekasidron, that if you apply these seven chemicals to the stain out of order, not in the order it says in the Mishnah, Hevidon Shavatan Tafer, or you put all seven one on top of the other, what you did doesn't count for anything, and you got to start all over. So there you have, that order in the Mishnah is significant, but otherwise not.
You probably ruined the thing if you did.
Maybe, I don't know. Rapapa Sava Mishmei the Rav, Oma Abramissus. Rapapa Sava says in the name of Rav, also our Mishnah, the Abramissus. And we know that midukam masvig Reb Shimon, because we see Reb Shimon is arguing shmami no dafka katoni, which means the Tanakama's order is not just Sami saying an order without any. There must be a reason for the order, and it must be. Yeah, they go attack in order of severity. The idach. Okay, so what would Rava Amar of Schur Amar of Huna answer to that? Why doesn't he counter on Mishnah? He would say the plug to like Kamairi, fine, but I'm not listing cases where there's machlokas. We have the Chachamim versus Reb Shimon, two different versions of what the order should be. I'm not counting that. I'm talking about where everybody agrees that to a certain list in a Mishnah, whether the order has significance or not.
So here, since
there's a machlokas, then you can't say it's true. The Chachamim have their version of the order. Reb Shimon has his version. But all I'm saying is, when you have a Stam Mishnah where there's no machlokas and there's an order in it, and then there's a list of things in it, the order is not meant to be significant except in the case of the Shiva Sama.
Well, that seems to be obvious. If nobody disputes that, why?
No, but again, it means, in other words, in the case of the Shiva Sama, and they adapt that to be in that order, but as opposed to, for example, as we're going to say later on in the Sugya, let's say, for example, by Chalitza, even though it's a Stam Mishnah about the order of Chalitza, it can be done as a thing can be done out of order, and you still use it. You have other examples as well. So the point is that
in the Chalitza, that's the point.
And in the case of the Shiva Sammanin, there's also one opinion. Right. But the difference is the Shiva Sammanin has to be in that order, whereas Chalitza does not have to be in that order. That's the point he made. As opposed to, yes, there are other places, such as our Mishnah, where the Chachamim and Reb Shimon disagree. Fine, there can also be significance to the order, like the Shiva Sammanin. But I'm not counting those because that's a different kind of thing. Rapapa says, I have a third one that I can add, where the order in a Mishnah is meant to be exact. Af Seder Yuma, also the order of the Avodas that are listed in Masechta Yuma, the Avodas of Yom Kippur. The Tznan, as we learn in a Mishnah, Kol Ma'isi Yemek Kippurim Ha'amurim Ala Seder, all the things that are done as part of the Avodah of Yom Kippur throughout Masechta Yuma, they're all said in this particular order. And if you do one thing out of order before something else, then what you said doesn't count for anything. So you see there also, a Mishnah list has a list of things, and they have to be done dafka in a particular order.
And
so therefore, you see, there's another exception to the rule. You're saying a rule that usually ain muktam u'mu'ochar except for the Shiva Sammanim, and maybe except for our Mishnah according to their respective opinions, but I'll give you another one, the case of Yom Kippur. The Iyach. So, what would the other opinions? What would Rapapa Sava answer to that? he would say, true, but hahu chumra ba'alma. But that's for a different reason. The pasuk is machmir when it comes to the avodah of Yom Kippur. It's not because that one avodah is more important than the other. It's because the Torah is machmir, it's gzeiras hakatzur, that you have. It says over there, v'hoi salacham v'chukas olam, and wherever it says chukah by kavanas, it means it has to be this way and no other. So therefore, that's it. Then it means it's a gzeiras hakatzur that it has to be that way. It's not like when it comes, for example, to the Arba Misses of our Mishnah, why are they listed in a particular order? Because you're saying one is more severe than the next. As opposed to the Avodas of Yom Kippur, it's not, for example, that let's say the par is more important than the ayil or the or the girdle on the two seirim is more important than the ketor. The pasuk put it that way. The Eved put it that way, and therefore that's how it is. Okay. There's a different explanation. The Rav Reuven Margolius one is safer. Margolius Yam brings a different explanation that has a gears that switches around the answers on the last two. That when it comes to our Mishnah, it's a matter of Chumrah. Our Mishnah is a matter of Chumrah, not a matter of you have to do first Tchila then Sefer. It's a matter of the Chumrah, which one is more severe than the other. And Avodas Yom Kippurim is the Plug to Lekamayri. There are machloikas in over there about certain details of the order of the Avodah, and therefore we're not dealing with that. Rav Huna Bered Devishua, Ma'af Seder Talmud. Rav Huna Bered Devishua says, I'll give you another one where the order in a Mishnah is significant, is exact, namely the order of bringing the Korban Talmud in the Sefer Talmud. Tikhatoni Allah, the next to last Mishnah there says, Zehu Seder Talmud. This is the Seder of the Talmud as was done in the Mishnah. The Shivan of Mehdev Yemen Amen, the Mishnah finishes off. So therefore you see the order, there you have another one where the Mishnah gives you an order and it's meant to be precise. The Idach, what would everybody else answer that? Ahula mitzvah ba'alma. They would say no, but that doesn't mean if you don't do these things by the Korban Talmud, if you do them out of order, then it's puzzle. It doesn't mean, no, it doesn't mean you're not Yotze. It means, fine, the mitzvah is you're supposed to do it that way, but if you didn't, then b'di'evit, it's fine. Okay. So now then we have to ask, So what are all these rules? We're trying to mention that in general, in Muktam Amorcha, with the various exceptions that we listed according to the different opinions. So what are we coming to exclude? We want to exclude that you should know it's not the case with the Mishnah that describes the Seder of Chalitza. The Tanan, we learn in Yavamos, Mitzvah Chalitza, the Mitzvah of Chalitza takes place as follows. It starts out, Bahu v'yavivti l'tnei beisdin, that the Yavam and the Yavama come to beisdin, ho yunoitzim l'etza ha'igenes loy, and they give him advice that's suitable for him. For example, Rashi says, based on the Gemara over there, let's say he's old and she's young, or the other way around, you would advise them you're better off doing Chalitza rather than Yavam, because you're not really going to be compatible. Chenema, the passage says, v'korul l'zikne iru v'dibru, it says the elders of the city should call him in and speak to him. And then, if it turns out that chalitza is going to be done, but he a meres main yavam, she says my yavam refuses to marry me. But who am I lechafas? He says I don't want to marry you. Loshon Hakodesh, they say these words in Loshon Hakodesh, as the Gemara, the Mishnah tells us the Sota, and the Gemara explains there the limud how we know that. And then it continues. V'nikshi yivimta elav leinei askenim. His yavama approaches him in front of the askenim. V'cholta nala, she takes off his shoe. V'yoka b'fana, but she spits in front of him. Roy kanir l'dayanim. The spit has to be visible to the dayanim. V'onsa v'omra, and she speaks up and says, kocha yasal ish v'gomer. So it should be done to the man who doesn't want to rebuild his brother's house. V'niklash mevi yisrael v'gomer, and then everybody there declares chalutza nala. So, Rav Yehuda says, what the Mishnah is telling us is mitzvah chalitza. The proper way to do the mitzvah of chalitza is kodah. First she speaks, she says, mei and yivami. The kore, then he speaks, he says, like chafati l'tata. Chelandes, then she undoes the shoe. Verekekes, then she spits. The kore, and then she says, kocha yasalish. And we ask, we discuss on that in the Gemara there in Yavamas, Mike Mashmalon, what is Rav Yehuda coming to tell us? Masnithin, that's exactly what the Mishnah told us. Or what is Rav Yehuda adding? The answer is Hakam Mashmalon, Mitzvah Haki. What Rav Yehuda is saying, the proper way to do the Mitzvah is like that. But if you did it in some other order, less one bar, then there's no problem. So that's what we're saying. There you have it. You're still Yotze Chalitza, yes. So that's an example, then, when we're saying, Kol Mokum Shoshana Chachamim, Ein Mokdum Ocher, this is an example of that. Don't think because the Mishnah mentions it in this order, it must be done in that order. No, it doesn't have to be done in that order.
In
generals, all the korbanos, you don't do them in order, then...
No, so we said, for example, with the Tumid, we said you're supposed, there's a whole order. No, besides, I mean, with the korban itself, yeah, there's an order. Yeah, you can't sheft it before you sprinkle the blood, for example. But for example, the Mishnayos and Tumid describe over there the exact order in which the kohen would carry the pieces of the korban to the Mizbeah. And when we say in Abaya have a Sadr every morning, we say the order of the different avodas that they did in the Bismitish, the Baruch of Dolok and the Baruch Shnia, etc. So those kinds of things we're saying are not ma'akiv if they did it in a different order.
They are?
They're not ma'akiv, that's what we're saying. So even though the Mishnah says whether there is Seder Tumid, we said it's a mitzvah Balma. It's a mitzvah to do it that way, but it's so we're saying over here, in the case of Yibama, similar idea, that if the apich less than if you did it in a different order, there's no problem. Tanya Hachi, and indeed we learn like that in a Kikka, Bein Shehichtim Chalitza L'Rikikka, whether you did the Chalitza before the spitting, or the Kikka L'Chalitza, or whether first she spit and then did the Chalitza, Masha also. What's done is done. It's still, you've been yoyed to the Mitzvah. So that's the point. There you have a Mishnah that lists things in a certain order, but they don't have to be in that order. And there's another one that we want to point out that you would otherwise misunderstand and think that the Mishnah is telling you an exact order. Namely, a Mishnah says, also in Masechta Yoma, Kohen Gadol Meshamesh B'Shmona Kelim, a Kohen Gadol serves in the Beis Mikdash using 8 garments, except in the Kodesh HaKadosh, of course, the Hedyot Barba, and a Kohen Hedyot wears 4. What are the 4? The Ksonis, the long shirt, the long tunic, the mechasayim, the pants, the mitznefes, the turban, the avnet, and a belt. Most of alayim kohen gadol, the kohen gadol adds to them is other 4 choshen ve'efod and ve'il v'tzit. V'tanya, and now, so you would think, based on that list in the Mishnah, you would think the ksonis goes first, because the Mishnah listed ksonis first. You would think you have to put on the ksonis first, then the mechasayim. No, but v'tanya, but we learn in a braisa, the order in the Mishnah is not in the order you put it in. Minayin shaloyei dava kodim mechasayim. How do we know that nothing else of the Kohen's clothes should go on before the Mishnah Sayim. Shenema, because the Pasuk says, the Mishnah says, Bad you, I'll be sorry, because the Pasuk says that Mishnah Sayim, that the pants of linen should be on his flesh, which means, in other words, obviously it's on his flesh, it means, in other words, Rashi says, it means it's the first thing on his flesh, nothing else, of course. That's what we're going to say. So therefore, we see there the Mishnah lists it in one order, but it's meant to be done in a different order.
So what's the point?
So Vitana, my time, Akhtam, Eliksonis. Taka, then, in that case, why did the Tana put the Ksonis first in that case? The reason is Mishnah, Akhtam, Ekrah. The reason is because the Pasuk lists it first. In Parashat Achrimot, when it starts talking about the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol, it says, Ksonis bad Kodesh Yubash, or Mishnah say bad Yubasaru, or Avni bad, or Mishnah is bad. So it says Ksonis first, so the Mishnah also lists it.
Why
is the Pasuk? Okay, so why did the Pasuk put it first? The reason is Mishum de Machafi, Kole Gufa Adifale. Because the Pasuk wants to mention first the garment that covers his whole body. Ksonis covers him from neck down to ankles. So therefore, the Pasuk puts that first, but nevertheless, when it came to the actual order of putting them on, the Mishum de Machafi.
I don't know why the Pasuk wants to say covers the
whole body. Because that's it. Because it's near, so because that's the central thing. He should have his body covered when he's doing the avodah. So we list that first, but nevertheless, the Mishnah comes first. So there's an example where the Mishnah lists something in a certain order, but it means you don't do it in that order, you have to do it in a different order. So again, with the exception of the various ones that we mentioned, the Shiva Samonim and our Mishnah and Maisi Yemekorim.
Three things.
And yeah, Seder HaTamid is also the mitzvah, the ideal mitzvah. Our Mishnah with the Dalad Mitzvah and the Shiva Samonim. But now we're going to get into, why Taka do we have this order of severity? Why according to the Chachamim is Stila ahead of Srefa and according to Shimon the other way around? Like I've said before, we don't do it, but we don't wire up electrodes to the person and see how much pain they're suffering. So we have to learn it on other things. Skila Srefa, hold on. It's like this. Skila Chamorim is Srefa. The Chachamim takes the view that Skila is more stringent than Srefa. Because Skila is the punishment for Megadif, for somebody who curses the Eivishter, and for somebody who worships Avodah Zarah. And my Chumrah, what's so serious about those Averis? You can't push it Yod Eivishter, because those things, you're going against the fundamentals of what you're going against the Eivishter himself. So therefore, Skila must be the harshest. The question is, Adrabah Srefa Chamura. Adrabah, though, you could argue that Srefa is worse, Shekhen Nitna Labas Koyen Shazinza, because Srefa is the punishment for a Bas Koyen who is Mizaneh. and you would ask Maihora, why should that be worse? She came Mechalela to Sabia. The reason is because she's being Mechalel, she's downgrading her father. Her father is a Kohen, and now Noyagin Bechol, now we treat him as Chol, we don't treat him as Kohen. So the Yad Ramah says on that, the point is that there you have, not only you're going against the mitzvah of the Eveshtev by doing Znus, but also you're harming another person, you're harming the father. Now the father loses his dignity. You're not harming the Eveshtev by Megadev or Eveshtev of the Eveshtev is not subject to harm, so therefore in that sense you could argue that the Bas Kohen Shadid says worse. Yes. Yeah. On the other hand, no. Kasabri Rabban Nesua Yoytzel Estrefa V'lo Yarusa. No. The reason why the Rabbanon don't accept that argument is because they, okay, so we have to have like this. We have, as background, we have as follows. We know that the normal punishment for an Eshet Yeshu is Mizana, and the guy she's Mizana with is Chenek.
Yeah.
But you also have Strefer in the case of a Bas Kohen, and you also have Skila in the case of a Naira Amayrosa. So the question is, we know Chenek is definitely less than Skila and Strefer. Everybody agrees to that.
On the basis of
and we'll see later on in the Soviet. We'll get to it tomorrow, as a chance. Chenek is definitely less than Skila and Strefer. We'll get to that later. But the question is, when we say that a Bas Kohen Shezinsa gets Strefa, is it only in a case where otherwise she would have gotten Chenek, namely if she's already in the Suah, or is it even in the case where she would have gotten Skila because she's a Naira Amayrosa, nevertheless being a Bas Kohen, she gets Strefa? The Rabbanon hold that no, if she's in line to get...
We
mentioned it. No, we may have touched on it, but not really, no. And basically, no, we're going to discuss it. We're going to discuss it in the next couple of blocks of our panel. So like this, the Chachamim hold that when did the Bas Kohen get Skila? Yeah, we'll stop in a minute so we can all go to Meir. Yeah, let me just finish the sentence. When did the Bas Kohen get Srefa? Only if, had she not been a Bas Kohen, she would have gotten Chenek. Then, because she's a Bas Kohen, she gets upgraded to two levels to Srefa. But if she was a Naira Amayrosa, and she was going to be getting Skila, then the Chacham hold, she still gets Skila. So therefore, you can't say that Srefa is more serious because Machala Sabia. Because like this, she's Machala Sabia, she gets Skila.
If she was a Bas Kohen Naira Amayrosa,
then the Chacham would hold she'd get Skila, not Srefa.
So why does she get Srefa being a Bas Kohen in the other case?
Because the other case, she would have gotten Chenek. If she was a Nesua, she would have got a regular Bas Yisrael, who's a Mizana, gets Chenek. Being a Bas Kohen, because of Havia, Ima Chalolos, because she's causing her father disgrace, therefore she gets...
She's degrading her father.
Fair enough, okay, and she gets Skila, but so according to... That's the point, according to the Chachamim, in other words, so you're not going to take her down from Skila to Strefa when she's a Bas Kohen. Therefore, there's no logic, therefore there's no basis to say... There's no basis to say that Skila is stronger, is worse than Strefa, because even though it's true Strefa, it's true Bas Kohen Mechalela Sabia, but a Bas Kohen conceivably could get Skila as well. Since the Torah gives an Arusa Skila, Shema Mina Skila Chamora. Therefore, Skila must be worse than Strefa, according to the Rabbanan. Whereas Rav Shimon Taka will hold that a Bas Kohen gets Strefa regardless, whether she was going to get Skila or whether she was going to get Chenek. Fine, so according to him, Strefa Taka can be stronger than Skila.
Okay.
We can do.